Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
Today on the PR Moment podcast, we're chatting with Julieta Dexter, who's founder and CEO of The Communication Store. Julieta has recently launched the book Good Company, How to Build a Business Without Losing Your Values, which talks about Julieta's personal story, the lessons learned in the workplace, and how to navigate it whilst holding on to one's personal beliefs and values. For those of you who don't know, The Communication Store was founded in 1995. It's a privately owned firm with an income of 16 million and employs about 200 people, 180 in London and 20 in the US. It specialises in fashion, beauty and lifestyle public relations. Thanks, as ever, to our PR Moment podcast sponsors, the PRCA. And just to let you know, we've launched, needless to say, a virtual series of events starting on April the 23rd recently. Do have to take a look at the PR Moment homepage for all the details. Two of those events are free to attend, inverted commas, and the other three, we've kept the price right down for obvious reasons. We realise it's tough times at the moment, and the price is only $29.99 to attend. Julieta, welcome to the PR Moment podcast.
Hello, hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Joining us from home, needless to say. First of all, it would be remiss of us to start this conversation without recognising the difficult times that companies and also society are currently going through during the COVID-19 lockdown. As a business owner, what have you learned over the past month or so?
First of all, thank you very much for having me again. I think since we last spoke, sort of things have moved on and changed. So, and not least with the COVID crisis that we're in at the moment. I think the first thing that I've learned is doesn't always go according to plan. I think as a business owner, one is constantly budgeting and planning and forecasting and envisioning. And then this happens. And I think the first thing is that being a planner and sort of always having a goal and an ambition, I've had to sort of really learn how to let that go and re-envision and remodel. And I think that's probably a very good thing, to sort of let go of things that you're sort of holding very tight to. I think another thing that I've learned is that you can never communicate well enough in a time of crisis, and I'm trying very, very hard to get that as right as I possibly can.
And the just in terms of the sectors you're in, some sectors are obviously more affected than others. I think that's just down to luck or not, frankly, whether people worked in sectors that were more or less affected by this. But how are the fashion, beauty and lifestyle businesses currently?
Yeah, it's really interesting. They're all behaving very, very differently, actually, and showing more or less resilience, if you like, as industries. We're also lucky because we've got clients all over the world that our perspective has been hugely helped by that. So, for example, we can see, obviously, progress in China. I, as you know, grew up and was brought up in Italy, so I've got a lot of friends, family and clients in Italy, particularly in the north of Italy, and then in France, and of course in the US, etc. So what we're seeing is not just our sectors, but also countries, parts of the world, reacting and responding at different times and with different emotions, with more or less positivity, hope, and so on and so forth. The beauty industry really does tend to be more resilient. The lipstick index, as it was called, is something that I believe in, that when your chips are down and when there is a time of crisis, this happened a lot towards the end of the wars as well, that you would buy yourself a lipstick or pick yourself up with a small treat, if you like. The fashion industry, of course, has suffered greatly, not least because of supply chain issues, as opposed to also, obviously, sort of orders perhaps being cancelled, etc. So I think that there will be potentially a longer tail there. And of course, in the lifestyle business, particularly in sort of food and beverage and hotels, of course, that sector has had to largely close down. But I would imagine it will bounce back after lockdown. Even if we are in partialised lockdown, I think that we will all want to support industries and also turn to life and enjoy ourselves outside of our homes again. So they're all very different, actually.
Yes, that first drink or first meal out afterwards is going to taste pretty good, isn't it? There's no doubt about that. We'll talk about your book in a moment, but the one scheme, one of the government schemes that I know quite a few PR firms are taking advantage of is the furloughing scheme. Is that something you guys have looked at?
Yes, I mean, Ben, we as a business, I hope that we've been preemptive in all of our actions here. I want to put my arms around the business community because it's really tough, and it's tough for everybody. It's not just one sector. And I suppose that what we've really done is we've kind of lent into one another and tried to help our clients in the best way we possibly can. And within that, tried to service them as best as we can. And that does mean that one has to look at every single role in the business. You mentioned in our discussion previously, if there was any sort of shame perhaps in furlough, and my thought on that is absolutely not. We've all got to try and get our businesses through out the other side. And we've looked at everything from rent to business rates to PAYE to furlough to a reduction in salaries overall. The first move that we made was we actually went out to our leadership team, obviously including myself and my business partner, Daniel Marks, and asked really in the second week of March whether any of our leaders at the most senior level of the business were able to take a voluntary pay cut. And I've been completely humbled by the extraordinary sense of collaboration and togetherness as a company of their incredibly generous offer. And I think that what's been so heartening for me is that we didn't apply something across the top. Each household suggested what they were able to manage.
Right.
Since that time, we have applied a 20% pay cut across the business in the UK. We're very, very mindful of more junior level salaries. And I think that we're small enough at this time, Ben, to be able to also look at individuals as well. There are some roles that we are considering furloughing, of course. Really, if people quite literally can't do their jobs because we're not in a physical space of an office. And again, as I say, I don't think there is any shame whatsoever in that. The government is trying to help us, I believe. And I think that all of the schemes should be very carefully considered by all businesses.
No, without a doubt. Just to echo that, there's no shame in it. All businesses, including ourselves, we're all just trying to make sure we come out the other side of this in decent shape to continue post COVID-19, whenever that comes and whatever that might look like. Now, just turning to your book, one of the themes of it is clearly how to build a business without losing your values. That's the title, I should say. Why did you decide to write it?
The truthful answer is that I didn't decide to write it. I was approached. They say there's a book in everybody. I've never felt that about myself. I think there are so many incredible books in the world that I haven't had time to read. So I just sort of wonder whether the world needs another one. But I was speaking at a conference in Austria, and I was approached by an author and ghostwriter and great thinker, I felt and feel, who said, you know, have you ever done a book? Because you're talking about values in business, and I think that this is a really interesting thesis to be sort of discussed at the moment. And so I suppose that the reason why I went through with the project was A, that I feel incredibly passionately about my own life experience at work. And if I could do anything, and frankly, I spend quite a lot of time doing this, helping people coming into the job market to A, know how to behave and how to navigate through the sometimes complex world of work, but also what they should expect from organizations. I spend a lot of time doing that anyway, so a book seemed like a normal sort of follow-on from that. Second of all, I have been lucky enough, and I really mean that, to build a business over 25 years, which is quite a long time. So it felt sort of a nice thing to sort of package up 25 years of thoughts around business and our business. And I suppose also, thirdly, it has turned out to be quite a useful marketing and PR tool, to be honest with you, to extol the values that I've been trying to bang the drum for many, many years now.
How long did it take you to write it?
Funnily enough, the project started in 2017, at the back end of 2017. And, you know, I have a full day job, as you probably know. And so any writing and collaborating on the book chapter by chapter sort of normally happened on a sort of Tuesday evening after work. And then once the sort of framework of the book and the sort of meat was done, I have to say there was a very, very long process of editing and changing and fact checking, and that sort of took a lot longer than I think I'd forecast as a complete novice. But my publishers at Atlantic have been incredibly kind and thoughtful in helping me through the process. So I guess I know a little bit more about it than I did when I started.
Did you find it, was it almost a therapeutic element to it, as you're, because you're very passionate about ethics and business and culture and purpose, aren't you? Was there, did you find it a pleasant process to go through? The writing of the book, I mean?
Yes, I hesitate somewhat, because I think that as a business person, I am multitasking, multi-thinking, and I'm under pressure a lot of the time. And in a way, it sort of took me back to using my brain in a very different way, similar to what you would do at university when you're sort of writing a very long essay over 2 or 3 weeks, say. And my brain just isn't used to that. So I had to sort of push myself more into more thoughtful, calm, quiet reflection, as opposed to, you know, what my inbox box looks like, which is sort of 400 emails a day. So it's just sort of exercising the brain in a very different way. I have to say that I've been quite tentative about it. I don't sort of see myself as a great writer. I've been very blessed with a fantastic team, and I've been completely bowled over, and I really mean that, by the interest in this book.
Brilliant. I mean, the book talks a lot about the importance of culture in business. And as frankly, all of our employees and customers are going through such a tough time at the moment, it's a pretty prominent topic at the moment, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, again, this is a subject in the book, is that I don't think, Ben, that there is a company out there who doesn't have some sort of mission statement or some sort of purpose-driven statement. And I always say to people in the office that, you know, everybody can say it, you know, everybody does that, but actually acting that out, actually doing that, walking the walk every day, is incredibly difficult, and it takes being extraordinary, I believe. It's not easy.
Go on, just talk us a bit about that. How do you, yes, that's true. I mean, years ago, I wrote some values of PR moment up on the site. I think they're still there somewhere, but it's really does, it needs some discipline to bring those values through every day, doesn't it? How do you do that?
Well, particularly around sort of relationships in an office. You know, if somebody's really irritating you, or, you know, going to the boss and telling them that your work was their idea, you know, how do you handle that stuff? Yeah. How do you behave? And I think that I had, right at the beginning, the C's of the communication store. And that has really evolved a little bit now, and I'll explain to you why. So my C's were that if you started a business and you wanted to try to be a decent human being and be successful in business at the same time, whatever that success might be, slightly sort of, I think success is a sort of moot point, frankly. Could you be clever? Could you be considered? Could you be considerate? And maybe a little bit countercultural, just because everybody else was behaving one way, could you consider behaving in a different way? And a few years ago, the leadership team went through a process and they felt that those words were a bit old fashioned. And so I said, fine, you know, if you guys don't, you know, like those words, let's find some words that you really do believe in. And the words evolved into the following four words: passion, care, strength, and wisdom. So I believe that that is an incredibly useful way to extol your values as a business. So if our values are to be passionate, caring, strong, and wise, every single decision that we make, every way we behave with one another, every person we hire, we should be saying, am I at this moment being passionate, strong, caring, or wise? And if I'm not, I'm not extolling the values. And honestly, we use that, you know, when I'm interviewing people, I sit there and I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, now, are you passionate about this? Are you a caring person? Are you strong? And are you wise? So particularly in, and I think that when you need those values more than ever before is during a crisis, is when you're really under pressure. Because that's the moment where, you know, people can tend to panic and sometimes show their very worst side. It's when you show your true colours. And I think that in this moment, the leadership that is needed to calm people, to comfort people, to show compassion, even when you have to make very hard decisions, gives people confidence and makes them feel safe.
Is there a sort of virtuous circle between the culture and values of a business and the type of people who work within it? Do you think people are reformed when they join the business or change a bit? Or does a business only just almost subconsciously, maybe consciously, hire those types of people that are fit within those values?
I think so. I mean, you know, many years ago, Ben, I did a piece of film, a short video with the Daily Telegraph Business Club. And it was, you know, sort of long, long time ago when sort of digital communications were starting, and they put it on their site and we were allowed to put it on our website. And on that piece of film, I talked about values and purpose and what TCS stood for. And nobody really came for an interview. No client really came to us. You know, they'd go on the website and they'd see that video and they'd work out who we were. And I just want to be very, very clear. Those are our values, but they're not everybody's values. And I'm certainly not one to start criticizing other values. I've sort of set out my stall. I believe that the people in our business enjoy those values, and it kind of gives them a sense of understanding what sort of environment that they're in. So there's a sort of safety net there that they know what's expected and what they should expect from the business. But I'm certainly not suggesting that our values are the right ones. They are just a set of values. And I do think that it almost osmotically attracts people who share those values.
Sure. Yeah, but just on your personal story or journey with values, and I'm thinking how this applies not just to you, but to all of us. You've built the communication store for 25 years. Have your personal values changed in that time?
I think I'm just starting to grow up a bit. I was quite young when I started the business, and joking apart, I don't think I really knew who I was. I think at that time I was more railing against what I had found in the workplace. And in the first chapter of the book, I talk about losing my father very suddenly. He was 58 and was very much the beacon of my own values and what I felt was, and what I'd been taught was how you behave. And I think that that trauma and that loss sort of drove me in the workplace to be less tolerant to what I deem to be behaviours that aren't really for me. Just in terms of the sort of more dog eat dog, you know, profit at all costs above anything else. People being very self-interested, as I very often say, we is the most powerful multiplier of me. And it just wasn't really for me. So I think that at that time, there's part of my personality which is competitive rebellion. If I don't like something, it's a bit like red rag to a bull. You know, okay, let's do something about that then. Let's not sit here and moan about it. Let's actually see if we can change that.
And in your case, that was setting up your own firm. So are you the same person now, do you think, as you were 25 years ago? I'm just trying to work out, because I don't think I am. But I'm similar but different. I'm just trying to work out whether you think actually at your core values they haven't really changed.
I think I'm just more of what I was then, and I think I've worked out who I am, and I'm perhaps a little bit more confident about knowing who I am and believing in those values.
Sure. Yeah, I was getting a bit deep now. But do you think success has brought that, or do you think time has brought that? That confidence, I mean.
I don't think it's success, because I have very deep thoughts about what success actually is, particularly now. I think it's more age and feeling a little bit surer about oneself and knowing how you want to live your life or not. I mean, I was 50 last year, and it is a bit of a watershed moment. And I think that you do decide as you go through life, this is who I want to be. These are the people I want to surround myself with. And I think you're just a bit more confident in what you know is okay for you.
Sure. Okay. Now, you work in the fashion sector, or your agency does, which is pretty synonymous with junior people often being treated pretty badly, frankly. This is an approach that is very different from the one you've taken in building your business, right? There must have been a tension at some point between how some of your clients treat their people and the way you guys treat your people.
I think that, you know, we have a one-page document in the office, which is called Our Commitment, which is literally sort of, it looks, you know, it's a mantra, if you like. It's a commitment to how we behave and how we hold ourselves up to a set of behaviours. I personally, obviously, have worked in the fashion, beauty and lifestyle industry. They're all different. And I've met some of the most wonderful, caring, extraordinary, creative people in the fashion industry. And so I sort of don't really want to single the fashion industry out, because I think it's behaviours in the workplace are sort of endemic, really, across business. I believe, rightly or wrongly, that there's always been a little bit of junior people being second-class citizens. And I don't subscribe to that. Particularly now in a tech-driven mobile digital world where somebody of 25 years old knows a ton of stuff that I don't know. And I think that whilst clearly older people have got wisdom and experience that a younger person doesn't have, to me, where the magic happens is when those two parties could come together in a collaborative workspace without the sort of hierarchies of you're the little minion in the corner. It's just not what I believe in. And I experienced that in my own career, and I would never want somebody to feel that in my regard. And again, actually, I was talking to a couple of senior leaders in the business who said to me, you know, Julieta, when you're in the room, more junior staff are a bit more tentative about sharing their ideas. And we had a very long conversation, which we haven't got to the bottom of yet, largely due to the virus, about how we could stop that behaviour. How could we do things together that would stop more junior members of our company feeling that they can't express their ideas and thoughts more openly with senior people in the room.
Right. When we talked before, you mentioned something which just made me think. You asked whether a decent person can run a successful business, which I know is something that you don't believe. But so is that a rhetorical question, or do you fear that there is this sort of perception out there that you have to be very hard-nosed within business and currently?
I think it was more so when I started. I think that, you know, the idea that profit above people is, you know, a very well-trodden path. I think now that the world is coming my way a bit. And I think that we'll learn a lot in this crisis as well. But certainly if I had talked about kindness, which I did a lot when I started the business, I was often patronised. And I want to be very clear that I'm talking about stereotypical behaviour, largely speaking. But now, if you talk about empathy and compassion and kindness in the workplace, it's like, oh, yes, you're really onto something now, emotional intelligence. And when I was talking about that 25 years ago, there was a bit of there, dear, you're just a lovely girl. And, you know, you don't really know how to run a serious business.
Just talk us through what those softer skills are.
Well, funny enough, sometimes I talk about my maternal skills, actually. And, you know, certainly when I was trying to prove myself when I started the business, I admit that I went to Marks and Spencer and bought a pinstripe suit and had a black briefcase because I thought somebody might think I was a bit more serious than I was worried that I was. And now I think that I'm perfectly able to be, frankly, much truer to myself. I do care about other people enormously. I care particularly at the moment, but always, frankly, around my community, you know, the community of people that work at the communications store. And so sometimes I do apply maternal skills, which is about caring for others. And Simon Sinek, the great business thinker, in my view, said to me once, you know, Julietta, if your child was naughty or did something wrong, you wouldn't put it immediately up for adoption, would you? which I thought was rather a lovely way of saying, you know, people are going to make mistakes in a workplace. Of course they do. I do all day, every day. It doesn't mean that you have to turf them out the first time they've done something wrong. You know, perhaps there's another way of nurturing and guiding and saying, you know, this was great, but this wasn't so great. What are we going to do about that?
Just talk me through what you define as emotional intelligence and why you see it as such an important part of leadership.
Well, you know, they say that there are 7 or 9 intelligences, and I think that this is probably the most valuable one in a leadership position. And I think that emotional intelligence for me is about reading other people. It's about understanding those around you and what they are really thinking and feeling. And those are two very, very separate things. And to that end, I think that real leadership is about people trusting you and believing in you and then believing that you are ultimately there for everybody, not just for yourself. And certainly I've been in situations where, you know, the minute the boss leaves the room, there's a lot of eye rolling and a lot of, oh God, you know, what was all that about? And I think that somebody with emotional intelligence is very self-aware.
Sure. You talked a lot about the importance of culture in businesses. What are the benefits of a great culture for a business?
I think that the benefits are manifold. I really do. I think that a value set, a sort of set of a code of conduct, if you like, something that people believe in, creates for something that people can hold on to together as a collective. And I think that if you're really building an organization, if you're really building a business, as opposed to a one-man band or a consultancy that's just about you, I think that those values underpin everything and the success of the business in every way. And I think clearly, you know, having a clearly defined culture also attracts talent of people who, you know, reputationally have heard what you do and want to come and be with you and hang out in that kind of environment. And sure. It's the same for clients, Ben, as well.
Yeah, that's no doubt that's true. How's COVID-19, if you read the media, which we clearly all do at the moment, it certainly seems to have increased the importance of purpose and values within business. But at the same time, it's such a tough environment, isn't it? Cuts are being made everywhere. So whilst I agree with the principle that purpose and values are really important right now, I suspect the reality is that a lot of the softer stuff that you talk about that makes a good culture were cut about 3 weeks ago, weren't they?
Yeah, I'm going to really challenge you on that. So inside of our value set, when this happened and we were aware that this was coming, my business partner and I agreed that we would, inside of our value system, behave in a certain way. And we decided that we would have three pillars: transparency, preemption, and compassion. Now, I know that many, many, many businesses will probably not get through the other side. None of us, frankly, are exempt. I mean, of course, there are some businesses that I'm sure are very cash rich and can sort of get through this more easily than others. But certainly this is a moment of real, real crisis in our own business. And we are not at the bottom of the pit yet. We are still working with clients to work out what they can do, what they can't do, what they'll be able to afford or not. And so those three words, to try to be transparent, to try to be preemptive, and to be compassionate, is how we behave. So whilst I will and have already had to make very tough, horrible business decisions, it is the way that you do those that make the difference, I believe.
Okay, so having a good culture doesn't exempt you from making tough, hard decisions. It's just how you do them and frankly why you do them, I suppose.
Absolutely right. And I think that's the point. And I think if I've ever been misunderstood in terms of values, people, I think, believe that if you're caring and kind and thoughtful and considered, that you're not able to make those tough decisions. Absolutely not, Ben. I regret that this is a business. It is a values-driven business. But tough decisions have to be made all the time. I just try to make those decisions and behave as if I was sitting on the other side of the table.
Absolutely. On a lighter note, we're all working on the assumption that the world will in the end get back to normal. What do you think that normal might look like? Are we all going to be... You do a lot of travel in your role. Do you think you'll be getting back on those flights fairly swiftly?
Listen, I think at the moment what we can see is a sort of parting of the waves in front of us. You know, there are some brands and some businesses that want to get back to where we were before as quickly as possible. And I'm extremely sympathetic for that and of that, because it's very tough out there. And so I get it. And I think that that is a perfectly reasonable way of behaving. On the other side, I think that there are many, many people who are looking at this as an opportunity for real change. And the world has stopped, and the world has changed so radically in such a short period of time that perhaps we have a moment of pause to listen and learn and make proper change in how we were running our businesses. Daniel and I have been extremely fortunate because at the back end of last year, in late November, early December, we assembled a global advisory board to really look at critical issues that will change and disrupt our business. And that those were things like sustainability, the circular economy, technology, data, AI, and such things. And so we were already in a process of frankly looking at our business and reinventing it. And this has accelerated that consultancy process a great deal, because I think that this is going to have a long tail. Our businesses will not just bounce back in 5 minutes. We're all going to have bills to pay for certainly the rest of 20 and 21, I believe, at the minimum. And actually having a good hard look at your business and using this as a moment to really rootle under the bonnet and see what bits you don't need to be doing anymore. I think that's time very, very well spent. And to that end, your question about me being on flights. Yes, I think that all of us took aeroplanes far too liberally and glibly, frankly. And clearly, there are many industries that need to be protected and looked after. But perhaps I shall be flying a little bit more responsibly.
Julieta Dexter, founder and CEO of The Communication Store, thank you so much. If you enjoyed this podcast, Julieta's book, I've no doubt, is available from all good bookshops and Amazon as well. It's called Good Company, How to Build a Business Without Losing Your Values. Julieta, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Ben. It's always lovely to talk to you. And thank you very much for such a generous plug.
No worries. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.